This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. We are pleased to have Dr. Daniel Heimbach with us on the program. Dr. Heimbach is Senior Professor of Christian Ethics at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He has a BS from the United States Naval Academy, an MA and MDiv from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, a Master's in Philosophy, and a PhD in Law, Politics, and Christian Ethics from Drew University Graduate School, and he has earned certificates for further study from the Harvard University, John F. Kennedy School of Government, and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Institute of Government. Dr. Heimbach has served as an expert witness before the United States Congress and served 2 years on the White House staff under President George H.W. Bush. Dr. Heimbach has written or contributed to over 14 books and has written more than 60 articles and book reviews, and he is with us today to discuss his latest book, Why Not Same-Sex Marriage? A Manual for Defending Marriage Against Radical Deconstruction. In the book, he responds to 101 arguments that are being made in favor of same-sex marriage. And while we probably won't have time to discuss all 101 of these arguments, we are extremely excited to talk with Dr. Heimbach today about this very important book and the insights it provides. Dr. Heimbach, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much. It's a privilege to be with you.
Well, as we get started, Dr. Heimbach, tell us generally about the book, Why Not Same-Sex Marriage? What inspired you to write it, and what led you to specifically address many of the most popular arguments being made in favor of same-sex marriage in our culture today?
Well, it's obviously one of the most pressing issues of our culture today, and is affecting a lot of people and getting a lot of press. So for nothing else, we need to address that. And certainly because it is addressing marriage, and that's such a fundamental social institution, and as Christians, we know that marriage is an institution that is not only essential to social order, but is very important to the Creator as well. I've been working on this book for quite a long time, and it results from over 10 years of researching arguments that are being used by advocates to change the way the public thinks on same-sex marriage, and then thinking very carefully about what is wrong by the various arguments that they make and refuting them hopefully in the most effective way and in a focused, short way, because usually we don't have time to spend a long analysis in responding to truth claims that are affecting the way people think. Particularly, I've written this book to be a resource for people like pastors making public statements to the secular media, to help parents who are needing to answer questions raised by their children who are home from college, to help youth ministers train young people how to engage the culture in moral witness, and to help young evangelicals needing to separate their empathy for cultural change and cultural relevance from fidelity to enduring truth as fixed by God's ordering of reality. I hope some non-Christians will read it as well, but it will certainly equip Christians to engage non-believers out in the general marketplace of ideas.
Well, that is great, and that is something that is so important in our culture today. We talk to Christians all the time who feel challenged to present God's truth in a loving and compassionate way, but in a truthful and an endearing way to family, friends, even to individuals who may be struggling with a same-sex attraction, to help them understand why this issue is so critically important to our culture and for us as Christians to really be salt and light in the culture and to stand up for what we know to be the truth of our God. Now, Dr. Heimbach, you have described your book as both unique and strategic. Explain, if you would, what you mean by that.
Well, it's unique because no one else has produced a manual to resource defending marriage against the contemporary assault being made against it. People have written books defending marriage on our side, but this is not a chapter book. It's not something you sit down and read from cover to cover, nor is it something you would even use as a textbook so much in a class. Rather, it is a resource manual that is designed to resource folks who are having to respond to charges and truth claims that are being made, you know, maybe in an article, maybe in a newspaper, maybe on a show, maybe in an interview. So I have designed it that way. That is, it is organized to respond to different arguments. So there are indexes that you can look up different truth claims that are being made and then look that up and look to see what can be said in a succinct, clear way as to why that's not right and why keeping marriage as it is currently defined and framed is really best for the common good. It's really strategic as well as unique, because the battle, I think, over marriage in our culture is being won or lost depending on which side can most effectively influence people who haven't made up their minds, or at least not made up their minds strongly enough to really be committed. That is, they're still listening to both sides of the argument in the public square, and this needs to be done in secular terms, because that's where the debate is going on, and it's about public policy, it's about civil law and civil marriage. The strategic problem is that our side in the culture has, on this particular issue, not really been engaging it. The other side has been flooding the public arena with false ideas, and almost no one on our side is responding to them. For the most part, our side's been talking to ourselves, that is, to people who are already convinced that same-sex marriage is not right and should not be allowed. But we have been ignoring people who are out in the marketplace, who are listening to both sides in the secular marketplace, people who are writing editorials or reading editorials read by general readers, secular entertainment, major news channels, and political speeches and so forth. And they have only been hearing one side, because our side is not responding to those claims out where it's being debated. So this book I've written to go after undecided minds that are out where the real battle's being won or lost.
Well, I know you have stated that the book is not only written for an evangelical audience per se, but also for those sitting on the fence. Now, let's talk a little bit about the book and get into some of the questions. Unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, we probably won't have time to discuss all 101. I wish we did, but I would like to focus on about five of those. And the first goes something like this. Same-sex marriage should be allowed because marriage is about love, and homosexuals love each other as much as heterosexuals, so why should they not be allowed to get married? How should Christians respond to this equal love argument?
Well, let me respond to that argument by using the book, and also in a way that would help listeners understand the usefulness of the book and how to use it. When you hear that argument, whether it's in a conversation with a neighbor across the fence, or whether it's, you know, in a class from a teacher in a secular university, or on the job, and some of you're talking to a non-Christian friend or colleague, and they're raising this question and you need to respond, you can, first of all, look up in the index false claims that are arguing in favor of redefining marriage to normalize same-sex relationships. And it's also indexed in the reverse, that is, the truth claims on our side that are opposed to that. So in this case, that actually is the, in the book is number 8, the idea that marriage is about love and homosexuals love each other as much as heterosexuals. So it's only fair to, you know, allow them to get married, at least in terms of civil law. I would respond to that by saying that proponents of that argument, making that specific argument, are confusing a valued, though not absolutely essential, motive that for mate selection with what qualifies marriage as a social institution. Marriage certainly is more enjoyable for the participants when it incorporates how they feel about one another and how they desire to treat one another, but a marriage still is real, that is, it still continues to exist in public terms when participants do not like each other, and even when they treat each other rather badly. That is, love makes the participants in a marriage feel that it's worthwhile, but the love they feel for each other is not what warrants the public interest in affirming the marriage. The public interest in law of affirming marriage is not to affirm the way people feel, but has to do with how marriage moves individuals toward bridging the male-female divide and favors procreation, how it disciplines the participants' appetites in order to have and raise children. And so out of that, really, if you want to get to the heart of what's wrong with it, I would say that same-sex marriage is wrong because it confuses sentiment with what structures marriage as a social institution.
Well, another popular argument is that same-sex marriage should be allowed because it is better for the children of homosexual couples or a homosexual to have parents who are married rather than not married. Why is this argument so incorrect, although it may tug at the heartstrings? I think that you argue in the book that it is not a legitimate argument.
Right. That's true. That's also one of the arguments that I deal with in the book. And if you go to where that is dealt with, you can see that I say there that the argument uses misguided pity to get people to accept something that is actually bad for children everywhere. That is pity for, oh, well, you know, children, you know, some parents who have gotten married or have, you know, homosexual relationship have nevertheless procreated children by maybe a previous spouse. And wouldn't it be better for that child to have two parents, even if they're both male or both female? The fact is that that concern actually would lead to doing something, changing the definition of marriage in terms of public law in a way that actually is bad, not just for that child, but for every child. It proposes removing the social support that we have in marriage law now that favors the family structure that's actually best suited for children. That is the combination of a man and a woman, you know, procreating and raising their own biological children, to remove social support for that structure in order to give a very small number of homosexuals a way of actually using law to force others to condone their lifestyle. The number of children actually who live full-time with a parent who's claiming to be homosexual is actually less than 1%. It's about 0.2% of the total number of households in the United States. And however those making this argument would have the public abandon the significant child-benefiting reason society has for keeping marriage law as it is, all for the sake of something that is not likely to help children that they are calling others to pity. So at the heart of it, I would say that this argument is wrong because it assumes that having both a mother and father is irrelevant for children, which ends up actually being bad for children.
And I think one of the primary and fundamental reasons for that is that the same-sex marriage household, just by its very nature, denies that child the child's natural mother or father. And clearly, that is not the ideal situation for the productive raising of that child.
In relation to that, you know, there, you know, folks might dispute that and say, well, it's better for a child to have two parents than to have one parent, and that the gender relationship or the gender identity of those two parents is irrelevant to the welfare of the child. But there are significant studies that prove otherwise, and I include references to those for those who are interested in backing it up.
Dr. Heimbach, unfortunately, we're nearly out of time for this week. Where can our listeners go to get a copy of your excellent new book, Why Not Same-Sex Marriage?
The way to get it, best way to get it, is to go to Amazon or the Barnes & Noble website where you can order it. Or you can go to a local bookstore. Folks who are in the North Carolina, in the Raleigh area where we're located, they can come to the bookstore at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, and they're available for sale there. Or you could go to any local bookstore and order the book through them.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Dr. Heimbach, thank you so much for your time today and for being with us on Family Policy Matters.
Well, thank you very much, John. Privileged to be with you.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800. or visit our website at ncfamily.org.